This is our fourth week in this journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, and I have said every single Sunday, and I'm going to say it again, we are learning together. We are learning together. I've not mastered this, and I'm not sure that any of you have mastered it either. And so together, we are learning what it means to slow down to a life of joy and satisfaction and fulfillment as God intended for us to have it. Solomon, as he's writing the book of Ecclesiastes, is the third book in the Old Testament that we have from him. Proverbs being the wisdom book, and Solomon being the Song of Solomon being the romantic book. Ecclesiastes also a wisdom book, but he's writing this as a retrospective view of his life. The sun is setting on his life. He's toward the end of his life. Death is near. And as he's writing this, he's looking back on how he lived his life. And he's saying, listen, don't be like me. Don't live your life the way that I lived it, caught up so much in myself and the things of this earth that I didn't find joy and fulfillment in slowing down and enjoying life the way God wants us to know it and to learn it. The last 3 weeks have been, I think, life-changing for myself as I've learned each and every one of these principles through the first three chapters, because in chapter one, we looked at Solomon's life, and he was just tired. He was exhausted, just flat out worn out from life. And the principle of the chapter was, we don't need to be too busy in life, too busy doing the less important, that we are too tired to do the most important in life. And that is seen in our careers, that's seen in our 6 days of living, that's seen on Sundays and how we prepare ourselves spiritually for the work that God has for us. We don't need to be too busy doing the less important things, that we're too tired to do the most important things. That was the principle of chapter one. And then we looked into chapter two, and we see Solomon collapsing. He's collapsing physically, spiritually, emotionally. And we learn a very important principle, that to avoid collapse, we have to slow down. And we have to slow down and recognize that God designed your life and my life to require rest. Rest not just to live healthy lives, but rest to live holy lives. We need to slow down and rest so that our lives can be healthy and so that our worship can be holy. Chapter 3 last week was very, very important. Most probably the most personal of the messages yet to my life. We looked at the chapter and we learned that we don't need to hurry life along. And we don't need to wish it away, because life is a series of seasons. And so we need to cherish the moment now. We need to enjoy this season of our life now, because he says at the end of chapter 3, if you hurry it along, if you wish it away, death is going to come a little quicker than you think it is. And before you know it, it's all going to be gone. And I applied it to my life personally, how often the season of our life currently, it's a little cray cray, if you will. It's a little difficult with three kids, five under the age of five. And if we're not careful at times, we cause ourselves to think, you know, when they get just a little bit older, maybe they can take care of themselves and watch themselves at home and drive themselves to church. And if we're not careful, we're just going to wish it away and we're going to hurry it along without ever enjoying the season now. And that's kind of been Kathleen and I's motto this week, cherishing the moment. I think I've said it multiple times throughout the week this week, cherishing the moment. We had the wedding for my sister yesterday, and I was all emotionally messed up, and so we got in the bed late last night, and usually Kathleen is the one to do the last minute rounds to each of the bedrooms and make sure the kids are still breathing and everything's good, and so she was so tired as she got in the bed. I was so shocked she didn't go check on the bed on the babies, and I said, are you gonna go check on the kids? And she said, no, I think they'll be all right. And I said, well, I'm going to go check on them. Now, she knew something was wrong with me when I volunteered to get out of the bed to go check on the kids. I said, well, I'm going to go check on Kate. She said, well, why are you going to go check on Kate? Of course, she didn't realize what was going on in my mind. I saw my sister walking down the aisle as I was standing there, and I saw Kate coming around the corner as the flower girl, and about 15 years went by really quickly right there, and I'm thinking about this day coming for my life soon. And so as I got out of the bed to go see if Kate was still breathing, I just leaned over and said, I'm cherishing the moment, all right? I'm cherishing the moment, and she's not going to be sleeping in that bed for very long. And so that was the principle of chapter 3, cherish the moment. Enjoy this season of your life now. Now, the scene here in chapter 4 appears to have Solomon taking a stroll and observing various experiences of different people. He's people watching. That's one of my favorite hobbies, is people watching. I guess I get that from my dad. My dad has no issue at all going shopping with my mom as long as mom allow him to sit on the bench out there and just watch people and just watch people. I enjoy it myself, people watching. That's what Solomon is doing. He's people watching. In verses 1 through 3, he's watching people in a courtroom. In verses 4 through 6, he's watching people in a workplace. In verses 7 through 12, he's watching people interact in the open air, in the marketplace, walking down the street, playing in the park. In verses 13 through 16, he's watching people in the political chambers of the palace. And Solomon's conclusion is that behind the face of every person that he's watching, behind the face of every person that he sees, his conclusion is that there is a common need among all of them. And that common need is a deep need for encouragement and friendship. Whether he was in the courtroom watching those who were being oppressed, whether he was in the workplace watching those working alone and together, or in the open air, the political chambers of the most high in the society, he realized that all of them had a common thread, a common need, and that was a deep need for encouragement and comfort in their lives, a deep need for community and relationship and friendship. I think you'd agree with me that there are few blessings in life that compare to the blessings of friendship. Friendship's not just important to your social life, it's important to your spiritual life. And maybe some of you have thought, since we've opened up the book of Ecclesiastes, all right, here goes Pastor doing something different. He's on this self-help preaching series. It's not what I'm doing at all. I'm just giving you the Bible the way that God gave it to us, in an effort to understand every integral part of how he designed our life to function. And one of the key elements that we see throughout the scriptures is that he designed our lives to function with friends. And it's not just for social experiments. It's for spiritual purposes. He says you need a friend. And so many of us are just too busy, caught up in so many different things that we haven't taken the time to establish one of the God-ordained foundations of life. Friendship. And I think the challenge today in our series in Ecclesiastes and what Solomon is trying to teach us as he looks back at his life, maybe indicating that he didn't have very many friends. He was so busy building his palaces and busy building the temple and so busy making all the money and everything that he could get, the wealth, the wisdom, the wild living, all this stuff that he had at his fingertips. He was so engaged in himself and so busy in his work and so called up doing all these things that he didn't make time for friends. And now he's looking back on his life and he sees the problem with himself and he sees the problem with all these other people that he's observing. He's saying, listen, we all have one thing in common. We're lonely. We have no comfort. We're without encouragement. We have lived our life without friendship. And I think what God is trying to say to us today is that we need to slow down and make some friends. We need to slow down and build some friendships, because you gotta have friends. And so I want us to think about the idea that we're not just to build the right friends, but we're to build godly friends. And how do we do that? Because I think some of you, honestly, is not, Pastor, it's not that I don't want friends. I'm just not sure how to do this. How do I build friendship? It seems like I have a hard time keeping them. I run them off. I scare them away. How do I build this kind of friendship? Let's just look at it from the text. Number one, I think this is important. Number one, if we want to build friendship, we got to stop looking out for number one, okay? If we want to build friendship, we got to stop looking out for number one. We got to stop looking out for ourselves. Look at it there in verse number 8, because verse 8 contains some very sad language. Look at it in verse 8. The Bible says, there is one, notice this, alone. There is one alone, and there is not a second. He says, I'm watching these people, and here's one, he's all by himself. He's alone, and there's no one standing beside him. He's alone. Think about that. Because I wonder how many today fit this category. You're alone. You're doing life alone. You're living life alone. Without friendship and companionship. And I want you to understand something this morning. God did not design life to operate alone. We know that since the Garden of Eden, when God created one individual. And the Bible says when God created Adam, that the Lord looked down, and this is exactly what the Lord said in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. It is not good that man should be alone. It's not good. He said, that's not how life should be lived. And when you think about it in relation to God, do you know that's the whole reason why he created man? Because God himself had the need for relationship, for companionship, for friendship. He wanted to walk with me and he wanted to have a friendship with you. So the whole reason, the whole purpose that man was even created was because God wanted friendship. It's not good to be alone. It's not good. Our lives are designed to live together in friendship, not alone, in isolation from everyone. You need friendship. You don't need friendship because I'm trying to give you some psychological buildup today. You need friendship because that's what God said he purposed for your life. You need closeness, friends, companions, relationships. Because God doesn't intend you to do this alone. And what I find very interesting in verse number 8 is that the reason this man was found living a life of loneliness was because he was simply looking out only for himself, working tirelessly to gain riches with no one to share them with. Look at verse 8. There is one alone, there's not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother. Yet is there no end of all of his labor, neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither can he say, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This whole thing, this life, this is just vanity. This is a terrible, terrible picture. Because not only did he have no friends, but he had no children nor relatives that he was close to. So all this time and energy that he's spending working for all this money because his eye is never satisfied, it's not even going to be passed down to people that he loves when he's dead and gone. This is terrible. And the reason why he doesn't even have children, brother, or friends to pass it all down to is because he spent his whole life focusing only on himself. That he missed one of God's greatest gifts. friendship. If the bulk of your life is spent wrapped up in yourself, then it is inevitable that your relationships will be weak. And I think this is worth some evaluation. There's a reason why I don't have a close friend or close companion, or the reason why I feel lonely and alone today, is it because I'm so wrapped up in my work and I'm so wrapped up in what I'm making and what I'm doing and what I'm building that I don't even have anybody to share this with? What good are golf clubs and calling the golf course and scheduling a twosome if you don't have anybody to play with? And when you get out there all alone and you're hitting those golf balls by yourself, just learning to have someone to talk to while you hit all these balls in the woods. Why is that? Have you ever noticed that when you walk or run together with someone else that you almost always go farther than you would if you were all by yourself? My wife noticed this about me. Listen. If we're on our regular walk, right, we're mapping it out to the very tenth of the mile that we're supposed to stop, right? And get the music going, set it up, and when it dings, stop. You know, we'll be out on the beach, and we're just walking and talking and walking and talking and walking and talking and forgotten that we have to walk and talk back to where we parked or where we're staying. Why? Because you seem to go a little further in life when there's someone by your side enjoying it with you. I asked the question this week as I was studying and preparing, why is it that people choose to do life alone rather than developing close friendships? Why do you think that is? I wrote down these three things. I think number one, time is a reason. Frankly, people don't make time to develop friendships. They choose to work as much as they can, pulling late hours, even if they don't have to. And if it's not work, they simply neglect to make the time to invite others into their lives. And they don't have time to bring people in their home. They don't have time to invite someone out for a cup of coffee. They don't make time to go take someone to the golf course with them or whatever the case may be. And so if you're struggling this morning, living alone, having a hard time developing friendships, you've got to ask your question, is it because I'm not making time to do this? I'm not making time? I think time's a reason. I think another reason is trust. Let's just be honest. I think some of us are fearful about getting too close to people. Because we've all had those relationships in the past where we've been hurt before, and we just don't want to have to go through that pain again. Why would I put myself out there, you know? I got close to this guy and we became good buddies, and the next thing I know, man, he's taking that knife out that I didn't even know he had. He's stabbing me in the back with it. Why would I put myself out there again? Or ladies, maybe you have someone close in your life and it's the same situation and you didn't even know it, man. They were gossiping about you and running their mouth about you and your family and your kids. Ain't no way I'm going to have a best friend anymore when people treat me like that. I'm not getting close to people. And we allow a few bad apples in our life to cause fear to rise up in our soul. And we don't get close to people because we're afraid. I got to be honest with you. That's one of my struggles as a pastor. My wife and I talk about it often. There's people that we want to be really, really, really close, but we're fearful about it. What if they hurt us? What if they put a knife in the back? What if one moment they're praising us and thankful for all that we've done, and the next moment they're trying to run us out of the church? Fear limits sometimes our ability to develop friendships. And I think a third reason, not only time and trust, I just to keep the alliteration going, time, trust. And then I wrote themselves are a reason why people don't develop friendships. In other words, me. I may be the very reason that I'm not getting close to others, because in the past I've been the problem. In the past I've been that selfish friend. And in the past I've betrayed that confidence. And in the past I've created all of that drama. And in the past I was the one pouting, and nobody wanted to be around a pouter. And so why don't people have close friendships? Because we're not making the time, because we're not trusting people. Or maybe in the past we ourselves have been the problem. And I think all of these are reflections of when we look out for number one. Solomon looked out and said, there's one alone. And he don't even have a kid to enjoy life with. Sad picture. How do I develop some friendships in my life? Stop looking out for number one. It's not all about you. God created you to have companionship and friendship. Build that with someone. Build that with someone. Number two, be the friend that people need. If I'm going to have some friendships, if I'm going to develop this, be the friend that people need. And I don't have time to read through all of verses 1 through 16, but just stay with me just for a few moments, because I think some of you might be struggling today making friends and keeping friends. And here's what I want to say to you. Don't worry so much about making friends. Worry about being the friend that people need. It's not so much about making friends. It's about being the friend that people need, that people need. It's noted as many people saying this. I've got an author down, but I don't know if he originated with it. I'll just give you the quote. He said, you can make more friends in 2 months of showing interest in them than in 2 years of trying to get them interested in you. Now think about that. You can make more friends in 2 months showing interest in them than you can in 2 years trying to get them interested in you. And isn't that approach that we often take when we're trying to develop friendships and closeness? Okay, what can I say? What can I do? What kind of front can I put out there to make sure that they're going to like me and enjoy me? And so we spend all this time and energy and sometimes money getting people to like us, when the truth of the matter is you develop real godly friendships when you just focus on being the friend that that person needs. The friend that that person needs. And I think that's the overwhelming message of this chapter. Solomon is observing all the many ways that people needed a friend. In verses 1 through 3, these people had no comfort in life. And they had no comfort because of the injustice that was brought before them. In other words, innocent people were being oppressed by power-hungry officials. And it was an interesting observation here. Solomon says, not only did the people being oppressed have no comfort, but the people who were doing the oppression had no comfort at all. And Solomon comes up with this conclusion that we've seen in chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3, which is the same conclusion of living life under the sun with earthly perspective rather than heavenly perspective. He's saying here erroneously that it would have been better had they never been born, attempt to live this life without comfort, companionship, and friendship. And I just want to say that someone today needs you to be a friend that will comfort them during a time of oppression in their life. So instead of focusing so much on how you can get that person to be your friend, why don't you be that friend to that person? They need comfort. They're being oppressed. They're going through a difficulty. So do what Solomon observed. Be the friend that people need. Comfort the oppressed. Comfort the ones who are oppressed. Verses 4 through 6, we see the next group of people. They had no contentment in life. And they had no contentment because they had been deceived. In an effort to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, you find this group of people here attempting to find satisfaction in things. Look at it again in verse 4. I do want you to see this. He said, again, I considered all the travail, all the labor, all the work, every right work, for this is a man who is envied of his neighbor. He's saying, here's a group of people, they're trying to keep up with their neighbors, they're trying to have more than their neighbors, and they're working day and night over and over again, finding identity in their work. And when they do gain it all and have more than their neighbors have, they're still not content. And in the principle of verses 4 through 6, Solomon says, which is another message within itself, which we'll get to in chapter 5 next week, he's saying it's better to have modest earnings and a peaceful soul than to have large gains and a restless soul. That's what he says in verse number 6. Look at it. Better is a handful. Better for you to live your life just having a handful of necessities with quietness, with peace, than to have both of your hands full with all the things of this world, yet you have travail and unrest in your life. And so as these deserving people in verses 1 through 3, it's people who have no comfort because of injustices, they're being oppressed. Verses 4 through 6 is people who were discontent but because they had been deceived into thinking that life's fulfillment and satisfaction were in the consistence of things. And the application of this is that someone today, as well as in verse number 3, someone needs you to comfort them through this moment of injustice in their life. But there's also a friend out there. There's also a person that may even be sitting beside you this morning that needs you to be a friend to them that will guide them into the truth of God's word and guide them away from the deception of this world. So don't focus on trying to make the friend. Be the friend. Be the friend that comforts in oppression. Be the friend that guides them in moments of discontentment. Then verses 7 through 12, which I'll come back to in just a moment, you find that they had no companionship because they were living life alone. And Solomon says you need friendship. Life is better together. And so it is with the theme of our message. Someone today needs you to build a friendship with them because they're alone. They're alone. And some of you are so gifted at that. You're so gifted at this. I'm thinking of many of you who, instead of going with the flow at times and just bunkering down in your seat on a Sunday morning, Sunday night, or Wednesday night, and just waiting for people to come to you like so many of us piously do from time to time, you're so good at finding the ones that are alone by themselves. Just getting out and saying, I want to be your friend, you know. And that's something that all of us should make effort at doing. And then you get to verse number 13 and through 16, and you find out here that this group of people had no cheering. Again, keeping it up with their alliteration, verse 1 through 3, they had no comfort. Verse 4 through 6, they had no contentment. Verse 7 through 12, they had no companionship. Verse 13 through 16, they had no cheering or encouragement. The reason they had no cheering or encouragement in life was because they had been forgotten. This group had been forgotten. Solomon gives this illustration that no matter who takes the throne of success, their popularity is going to be short-lived and soon forgotten. So Solomon is somewhat saying here, hey, I know they're cheering for you young boys to take the throne, but don't bank on their cheers for too long before the next moment they're going to be crying for you to be removed from the throne, right? And then you'll move on and you'll be forgotten. I think the application here is that there's someone in your life today that needs you to be a friend to them because they've been forgotten in this season of their life. They need to be cheered on. They need to be encouraged. Think about all these needs: injustice, deception, loneliness, forgotten. You know why we need to offer encouragement and build friendship during these moments of people's lives? You know why? Because there are seasons in our lives that we find ourselves in the very same time of need. There are moments where we have injustices, moments we've been deceived, moments we are lonely. Hey, moments when we've been forgotten. And what would have helped in those moments if there would have just been a friend to comfort, a friend to guide, and often offer companionship and encouragement. And the Bible tells us in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24 that we need to show ourselves friendly. So again, I say to you, don't worry about making friends. Just determine to be the friend that someone needs. And here's the third point that I want to give you. Number three. So if I want to build friendship, Solomon says, I've got to stop looking out for number one. Number two, I need to be the friend that people need. Number three, I need to embrace the value of close friendship. I need to embrace the value of close friendship. After all, in verse 9, he says, life is better this way. Embrace the value of a close friend because life's better this way. Look at it in verse number 9. Two are better than one. Life is better. Life is better when we live it embracing a close friendship. And I'm not so sure that we truly understand what friendship really is. I think we've downgraded it to the simple clicking of a mouse on Facebook. I think, honestly, sometimes we feel our friends are the ones who like our pictures or share our posts. Someone has said, a friend is someone who knows everything about you, but loves you anyway. Now, the first part of that on Facebook is probably true. If you post as many of you, I see you post everything about yourself. But honestly, taking all of that to the side, a true friend, a close friend is someone who knows everything about you and loves you anyway. That's why my wife's my best friend. Today we celebrate 12 years of marriage. She's my best friend because nobody knows me like her, and yet she still chooses to love me. And I want to tell you, I've got a handful of people like that in my life. A handful. They know a lot about me, and yet they still choose to love me. That's a friend. That's a close friend. And the Bible says you need at least one of those in your life. You can't be that kind of friend to a dozen different people. You can have one or two that are just that close, that close friend that knows everything about you and gives you what you need in times of need. Matter of fact, in verses 9 through 12, he tells us why we need this, and fill in these blanks and we'll wrap this up. Why do we need a close friend? Why do I need a close friend? And by the way, isn't having a close friend a wonderful value in life? It really is. Some of you are sitting beside your closest friend today. And I'm thankful for that. Because number one here, you can accomplish more together than you can by yourself. You can accomplish more together than you can by yourself. That's why he says you need a friend. Look at verse number 9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. This verse implies that a friend will help his friend when in need of work. A friend will help his friend when in need of work. Hey, I need to do this. Will you come over and help me? Yeah. I'm sure that I've got to change some diapers or something, but I would love to help you. No, a friend says, hey, my friend needs me to help him. I'm going to help him. My friend needs something from me, and hey, I'm going to lend a hand. I'm going to lend a vehicle. I'm going to lend a tool. Why? Because life is more rewarding together. We can accomplish more together when we do life together. And that's what he's saying. Everybody needs at least one close friend that when you're digging out in the trenches of your backyard, you know you can call them and they won't give you some excuse why they can't be there. You need that kind of friend. You know, like the other day when I needed my piano moved and I asked my brother and he said he had something wrong with his knee. I've not seen him limping around, but two people, he's saying here, two people who combine their strength and their creativity and their skills, they can bring so much more success than the one who attempts to do it alone. And so he says, you need a friend because you can accomplish more together than you can by yourself. You'll be more successful with a friend by your side helping you than you will thinking that you can do this all alone. Number two, you need someone to pick you up in moments of struggle. That's why you need a close friend. Because you need someone to pick you up in moments of struggle. Look at verse number 10. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, because he hath no one else to help him up. I mean, how many times have we had experience where if someone had not been there with us, we would have surely been in trouble? Those times where I've been in the church parking lot and I've seen a snake just laying there. Had someone not been there with me, I would have killed myself. And what if he would have bit me? I can just imagine that little black snake biting me and me rolling around in pain in the parking lot. Oh, and then I die at the church because of a snake. If someone would have just been there. That's the value of friendship. Because when I fall, when I struggle, when I get hurt, a friend is there to pick me back up and help me along the way. By the way, the accountability of a friend is invaluable. Man, I've got a friend who's another pastor that is, I have opened the door of closeness into my life because I need another man to keep me accountable. Someone who's not my family, someone who's not my spouse, I just need someone who can open up into the heart of my soul and ask me the tough questions. Are you remaining pure? Are you reading your Bible? Are you loving your wife? And really, there's hardly a day that ever goes by where I don't interact with that friend in my life in some capacity. Why? Because it's invaluable. When I'm struggling, when I'm down, when I'm ready to resign and walk away and go do something else for a living, he's there to pick me back up and say, no, don't quit. You can do this. And I the same for him. It's invaluable. Because he says, woe unto him that is alone when he falls. Woe to him that's alone when he goes back to the drink. Woe to him that is alone when he turns back on the pornography. Woe to him that is alone when he faces that temptation. What he's saying here, you need a close friend because you don't need to struggle alone. You need to embrace the accountability that a friend can offer you. Number three, you need the close affection and encouragement of a friend. You need the close affection and encouragement of a friend. Look at verse number 11. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be a warm alone? He's speaking of here the love, sympathy, comfort, and encouragement that a true friend can bring into our life. That warmth. He says a friend loveth a friend. Proverbs 17 says a friend loveth at all times. That's the connotation of verse number 11. At all times, in the cold moments of our lives, when there is a friend, it can bring warmth and affection, and sympathy, encouragement. I think sometimes, more than we like to recognize, we need encouragement. And more than we often see, others need encouragement. And I just want to say to you, from a practical standpoint, that the smallest word or note of encouragement can change the entire direction of someone's spirit. That's what friends do. They provide that warmth. They encourage each other regularly. By the way, be thankful for the gift of encouragement. And as you're thankful for the gift of encouragement, that you have a friend that encourages you regularly, make sure that you're committed yourself to give it regularly. Because everyone needs that kind of friend. A friend that provides them affection and closeness. And that's the key word that I want you to see. You need a close friend, not just someone who pats you on the back at church and says, love you, brother. No, you girls, you need that group. Fellas, you need that guy. You need that close companion who walks with God and together is going to be close with you. Someone you can be yourself around. Someone that is refreshing and warm. That's why I appreciate friends like Greg Van Benschoten, because I know that I can be myself, because at some point the time we're together, he's going to be a bigger idiot than me. And there's just some people that they don't get my jokes and they don't understand my humor. And I can't be myself around them because I'm the biggest idiot. But when I'm with Greg, he's the biggest idiot. And I love being around Greg. We all need that refreshing friend, that person we can be ourselves with. And then let me close with this fourth one, number four. You need a protective bond that is secure and strengthening. You need a protective bond that is secure and strengthening. Look at verse number 12. It says, if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. In other words, a friend will always have your back. That's what he's saying. When you have a close friend, you have someone that always has your back. He'll protect you against the physical and verbal and spiritual attacks on your life. And that bond, he says in the rest of the verse, that bond is secure. It's not easily broken. Look at it. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. It's a friendship that is guarded by one another. Hey, this may be true of my friend. That may be a failure or flaw in his character. But as his friend, I'm not going to allow you to run his character down in my presence. That's a friend. A friend who says, I've got his back. He may have done something stupid and said something stupid. I'm describing Greg. He may have been the biggest idiot you've ever seen, but that's my friend, and you're not going to talk about him, you know. It's my friend. And that kind of bond is securing. It's protective. It's going to take something huge to break that bond. And what's even better, don't miss this, what's even better is a third friend to provide the same. Don't miss what he said here. If one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. Two can take care of it, but a threefold cord. Now, a threefold cord is even better. It's even better. I learned two things from that simple phrase. Number one, I wrote down here, there's strength in numbers. That third friend provided a stronger bond. The second thing I wrote down here is don't be a one friend only type of person. Because what's apparent here is that when two friends are being the friends they ought to be with one another, they're not going to be exclusive. They're going to open the door to closeness with others. You follow me? It started with one in verse 8. It moved to two in verse number 9. It moved to three close friends in verse number 12. Don't be a one friend only kind of person. When you see your best friend having coffee with someone else, that's my friend. That's my friend. She, and I emphasize a she because guys could care less about this kind of stuff. She, that's my best. You can't have my best friend. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. I want to challenge you this morning to slow down and go get a friend. You're not the Lone Ranger. And even he had Tonto. Quit living life alone. Open your eyes to the needs of others. Be a friend that they need. Embrace that friendship. And all along the way, be reminded of this. And we're going to pray. Be reminded of this. Jesus Christ is the greatest friend a person can ever have. And he's the greatest example of friendship that you could ever follow. He cares for you like no friend has ever cared for you. He loves you like no friend has ever loved you. He has sacrificed for you like no friend will ever sacrifice for you. He will give you what no friend could ever give you. And you know what's the awesome part? Is that Jesus says to us, his followers, he said in the book of Matthew, ye are my friend. You're my friends. And so you need a friend. Stop looking out for number one. Be the friend that people need. Embrace the value of it. And make sure it's a godly friend. because none of this is going to help you in any fashion if your closest friends are people who do not love Jesus and who are not looking out for your spiritual well-being.